Hello, everyone. We're back. And today I am joined by Voice by Matt, is
That's
his
right.
name. Matt, what is your last name?
Matt Bertho.
Bertho.
The
And
T's silent, yeah.
awesome. Yeah, he DM'd me on Instagram saying, "Hey, do you want me to help you learn how to speak better? Do you need any voice techniques?" And I was like, maybe. And I was like, why don't you come on my pod and let's talk about some of these techniques and talk about your journey and talk about why you do it.
Yeah, this
So,
is great.
yeah, man. So the first question would be, what gave you a passion to start helping people with their voice? How did your journey start?
Wow, man. So I love that you're a college student, Harley. This is what I do. I teach students. I was in high school. I was a junior in high school. I dated this girl for 2.5 years, and it was a complete waste of time. And I was a jock boy, football, wrestling, baseball, not in choir at all. All right. I was on a four-time state champion wrestling team, and I was a state champion myself in wrestling. Well, me and this girl, we broke up, and I felt what a feeling I've never felt before in my life at that point, which was now I know depression. And I went to a counselor, the school counselor, Bob Tessman is his name. And he met with me like two or three or four times. It was about during Christmas at time. I was just kind of feeling just kind of down. And Bob, in one of the last sessions we had, looked at me. He goes, "Matt, what do you love?" And I said, "Kylie." And he goes, No. What do you love? Like, what gives you joy? What gives you passion? What do you love?" And I said, "Well, I love helping people. I like seeing people happy. I like seeing people do things, and that gives me joy." He goes, "Okay, well, what do you love that you're not doing right now? Like, what's something that you love that maybe nobody knows about?" I was like, "Well, I like to sing a little bit." He goes, "Well, tell me about that." I was like, "Well, I just sing in my car and, my truck and in the shower." He goes, "Okay, well, we're going to enroll you in choir." I was like, "Whoa, what?" He enrolled me in choir, went to college, didn't know anything about piano, didn't know anything about music, didn't know anything about key signatures. Didn't know anything about the voice. I was not a good singer. I was not a good singer at all. I grew up in the Midwest, in the lower Midwest, so like close to the Oklahoma border. And so in the Oklahoma border, I'm going to do it right now. You can kind of hear this is how we talk. We had a low tongue and we talk like this. And it was very raw, like there's a little country accent. We're from Ark City. That's where we're from. All right. So when I went to college in Wichita, Kansas, everybody thought I was from the South. Like they thought I was from some country bumpkin like town. And I was like, "No, I'm from Kansas, man. Like Ark City. Where's Ark City, Kansas?" Well, this is where it's at. Long story short, I changed my major 3 times. I was music ed, completely quit sports cold turkey. That was a bad choice because I gained like 100 pounds. I wrestled at 172 pounds. By the time I graduated high school or college, it took me 6.5 years because I changed my major 3 times. Music ed, voice performance. I didn't want to do foreign language, so I changed to religion for a year. And then back to music ed because I realized there was a thing called American Legion Boys State. And I got to be in charge of like 90 gonna be seniors in high school as a counselor to lead them to greatness. And I remember for 3 years standing in front of the room of these potential great people that were men and saying, "So you're supposed to be the best in the state of Kansas. Prove it to yourself. Show me your potential. There's no ceiling on your potential. It's what you do. So let's go. Let's get this going. Let's make this work." All right. So every year we just dominated the counties. Like there were 10 counties. We came in every year. And this guy came up to me at the end who graded all the projects that my kids put together. And he said, Matt, how did you do this? I said, what do you mean? He goes, every single project was perfect that they turned in. Every single one. How in the world did you get them to do that? And I said, well, I just challenged them. Like, they're supposed to be the best. I said, show me. Show yourself. You think you're the best. Let's see you do it. There's no ceiling on your potential. How great do you want to be? And so that inspired me to go back to Friends University in Wichita, Kansas, and go, Dr. Taylor, I'm supposed to be a teacher. This is what I'm supposed to do. So graduated. I filled out the only application for the only job that I wanted in Winfield, Kansas. And I've been here the last 19 years. I've taught private voice for the last 20 years. In the last 5 years, I pivoted and I started teaching a new voice technique called the Estill voice model.
Talk about that. What is that?
So the Estill voice model was created by Jo Estill in the 1980s. She was an opera singer and she wanted to know how come she sounds the way she sounds, but nobody else could sound like that. She didn't understand. And nobody had research to really prove to her why she sounded the way she did. All right. So she went to Pennsylvania. She went into the vocal science major, the vocal science work instead of the singing track, to where they put scopes down her throat. They had a spectrogram. They did all this research in the lab, right? Well, she realized that there were certain sounds that you could make, and then in your voice, like inside your throat, there were certain structures that would move. And as an engineer, you're like, well, yeah, this makes total sense, right? So like, for instance, there is this glottal onset offset that sounds like this. E, a, oo. And so that's where your vocal folds shut before air comes through, and then they close at the end. So aspirate abrupt onset offset. He, ha, who, aspirate gradual, yeah, and then smooth onset. Yeah. All those sounds were on the same pitch, but all those sounds were completely different than the other. And so what she did is she made these figures based on the 1980s figure skating she was watching. And she was like, I can make gestures and figures for every single one of these 13 things that we can manipulate and move to make billions of different sounds. And so when it was approached to me that I could be turned into a vocal athlete, I was like, okay, tell me about that. Sign me up for that. Cause I can, I'm an athlete. So like, you know, 5 years ago also, Harley, I yelled out loud to God and the universe, I want my health back on January 1st. I lost like 60 pounds in 6 months and I went from like 250 something. Today I weigh like 177. And I, at my lowest in the last 5 years, I was like 159. I was like, no, that's too small. That's really small for me. But this is kind of where, you know, we're going now. In the Estill voice model, there's a technique which is called the craft, which is kind of what I just introduced, all right? There's also like the area epiglottic sphincter. That's this area right here. It can narrow or it can widen. So, yeah. So if you put your hand right here, do this. Put your hand right here like this. Do this gesture. No, no, no. Take your other hand. Put your hand here and go, yeah.
Yeah.
Now go, yeah.
Yeah.
So that you felt this go wide. On yeah, do it again.
Yeah.
Now go yeah,
yeah.
And you felt it go narrow right there.
Man, that's interesting.
So basically, in this Estill voice model, there are recipes for different genres of music: opera, rock, pop, country, hip hop, blah blah blah. Like music theater, choir, And every single one of them has a different setup, different recipe that you use, that you manipulate these muscles and tendons and all the structures inside of your throat and in your body to make literally billions of different sounds. And so that was very intriguing to me, because I was like, well, you mean I can sound the way, any way I want to, I can never lose my voice. I can, you know, this is incredible. Yeah, let's do this. So there's certifications along the way. It's international, it's worldwide. I'll just be very transparent. The reason why it's not in every college and every university all over the world is because you have a bunch of people who have passed down knowledge for centuries of how they think singing works. So as an engineer or as a doctor, it's like I come out with this new technology that's the actual best way to do something, right? You better implement that new best way, or you're going to be bleeding people out like they did in the Dark Ages. So in the choir world, nobody wants to get rid of the way that they were taught. And so you have all these schools of thought. You have Westminster, St. Olaf, all these different schools, Michigan, that have a certain sound that their choirs are known for. Well, why in the world would I ever change that, Harley? Because people pay to come to school here for that sound. Why in the world would I do this new way that's better, more efficient, help us sound way better, never lose our voice? Why would I do that?
What are the common vocal mistakes that you see all these schools doing? Like, what are the common mistakes that you see individuals or schools? Yeah.
Low tongue. So low tongue, like I showed you when I was talking, like the Arc City. So low tongue is where the back fat part of your tongue falls in the back of your throat. And so if I'm like singing, slow down, you crazy child, you're so ambitious for a juvenile. So if I sing that with low tongue, slow down, you crazy child, you're so ambitious for a juvenile. It's a little flat. It's not as sharp. If I have high tongue, slow down, you crazy child, you're so ambitious for a juvenile. It's sharper. You hear the higher frequencies, like in an EQ, because when you have high tongue, you're getting higher frequencies in your voice, like spectrum, right? Too much air. So your vocal folds are the size of your fingernails, and they sit right here in your throat, all right? And so they can go stretch out, and they go higher. They can condense, and you go lower. They can come together kind of, and you get that sound. They can come together smooth with hardly any air. But they're that big, man. They're very small, all right? So if I take a whole bunch of freaking air and press it on those vocal folds, what's going to happen?
It's going to expand or compress. I can't even tell.
It'll go bloop. And that is what you hear when people crack, is they're using too much air and you're getting subglottal pressure because it's going. Well, you get that pressure build on those vocal folds. What's going to happen? They're going to give out. That's why people crack.
Interesting. Yeah, like crack means you're trying to, you know, hit a note, or you're maybe pushing too much air, but you're trying to sing, and then it's like, I don't even know what a crack necessarily is.
If I take a bunch of air, ah, you heard that. And that was the too much air busting out those vocal folds. Now, I'm not going to do that again because that kind of hurts.
Yeah.
All right?
Probably not worth it. Yeah.
Right. But you have on your podcast right now a legitimate example of too much air. And then also with too much air, if you have a spectrogram measures your voice through waves, all right, through lines. If I have too much air, let's see. We're doing a concert this Saturday. Let me see. Oh, shout through the heart and you're to blame, darling. You give love a bad name. All right. But if I use too much air with that, it's going to sound like this. Shout through the heart and you're to blame, darling. You give love a bad name.
Sounds like someone who like singing, but doesn't necessarily know how to sing.
Well, but what it is, Harley, is on the spectrogram, if you were to visualize that, you're going to see the first one, very clean, like blue lines, very clean. And in between, it's clear. Like in the black space, there's going to be no noise because air is white noise. It distorts the actual sound your vocal folds need to make.
Interesting. Yeah, I actually did choir for, I think, like 6 years, middle school through high school. And like, I didn't realize that, you know, there's an actual technique to singing. Like, you can actually, like, someone who's never done choir tries to sing, they might be okay, but like, there's techniques that you wouldn't even realize. It is a science, like you're saying, and it was just truly eye-opening. And right before this episode, I actually was doing some do-re-mi to, like, warm up the voice. Just like, you know, because I was like, I got to make sure my voice is on point, especially when Matt's coming on. But
well, but also, Harley, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, I don't really even do that stuff anymore. What I do is I do this. E, a, u, he, ha, hu, he, a, u, e, 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 a, u.
There seems to be some kind of science that's going on, but I can't really decipher it right now.
So what I just did in the Estill figure proficiency test, there are certain figures that you need to be able to sing and master. So what I did was I created a warm-up for my students that we do every single day. And what we're doing is we're checking how is my AES nasal, how is my high larynx, how is my mid tongue, how is my low tongue, how is my low velum, how's my high velum. And so we go through those move sets, and that is just like me going to the gym and stretching.
Interesting. Do you recommend like this kind of stretching before anyone sings or?
Always. Because yeah, you got to know what you're working with, because our bodies change every single freaking day. Right? And so that's the craft. So in the Estill voice model, there's craft, there's artistry, and there's magic. And Joe Estill made these three pillars. All right? Craft is what I just showed you, the technique. All right? And in the engineering world, in the world of everything, there are nerds all over the world that love to master craft. And guess what? That's it. That's as far as they get. And there's a lot of people that can master craft. Good job, guys. Way to be. Joe annihilated that, all right? And she has a whole bunch of people in the Estill voice model world that really love craft, all right? And then in the engineering world, in the business world, in the food world, there's craft. We got it. All right, cool. And then there's artistry. Artistry, we're taking the craft and we're telling a story, all right? We're going to make something out of this technique, all right? Whether it's a piece of art, whether it's some music, you know, in music, as you know, I'm sure you went down this rabbit hole. There's like serialism and weird, like tonality, kind of weird tones. Like they take numbers and put numbers attached to pitches and they make music out of it and they think it sounds good. Like that's not for me, man. Like it's there's no storytelling in that. It's their little story that they wanted to make up. Cool. Yay. But a very smaller amount of people master artistry in the world, all right? That's storytelling. So inside, outside, day, night, who's there? Who are you talking to? What's the visualization of the creation that you're going to make? You know, what is the World Trade Center going to look like? What's the One World Freedom Tower going to look like, right? That's art. That's the storytelling, okay? And then in Joe Estill's pillar, she put performance, I quote, legitimately, performance magic. She literally wrote the word magic. All right. And when I found out about this, Harley, I was like, okay, I want to know everything about that. because I've experienced that. That's my thing. That's what I want. That's why we're talking right now, because magic is what connects every single one of us in the universe. It's energy. It's frequency. All right. I started the 75 Hard in 2019. Andy Frisella challenged people on his podcast, the MF CEO podcast, in March 8th. I was listening to him and he said, none of you will finish this. 75 days, 2 workouts a day, a gallon of water, blah, blah, blah. But you have to read a self-help book. Well, Harley, I haven't read a lot of books in my life until that moment. One of the first books I read was Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And in Dispenza's book, he talks about meditation and he talks about energy. And this line I will never forget for the rest of my life because it changed everything. Energy is frequency. Frequency carries information. And so in 2013 to 2015, in voice lessons, I would experiment with students and I'd be like, close your eyes. I want you to feel this emotion, feel this love. I want you to feel it, like trigger it. Think about the moment that you feel this much love. Now visualize this inside, outside, day, night, who's there? And I remember in a lesson with Mariah, she did it and I said, okay, sing. And I played the piano and I kind of closed my eyes and I saw this hill and I saw she was outside. I saw there was a blanket. I saw there were flowers around her. And I stopped and I was like, hey, Mariah, were you outside on a hill? And this girl looked at me. She goes, yeah. I said, well, there's like a blanket, like some flowers around you. She goes, yeah. And I go, what the heck? What is that? And so then I got to where I would do it and I would visualize the scene. And then my audience, my students, because I never took this out to anybody, would be able to tell me, oh yeah, you were in like this wood cabin and it was like red and there's this fireplace and it was like nighttime. I was like, yeah. Well, I got freaked out about that a little bit. And so I threw it away. And then I read Dispenza's book in 2019. Energy is frequency. Frequency carries information. And I was like, oh, Andrea, my wife, I was right. I was right. And so in 2019, I went to an event, the Arete Syndicate live event in St. Louis. Stephanie Van Dam sat in front of me. I sat down and she turns around to me. She goes, Matt, did you know Tony Robbins has a vocal coach? And I was like, thank you, Stephanie. I can do that. I could totally do that. In fact, I'll be the best at it. And so since 2019, Harley, I started coaching business professionals and speakers, podcasters on how to do craft, artistry, and magic when they speak, and how to captivate their audience, how to make their audience feel what we want them to feel. And more importantly, like everything I just did to you, you saw what I wanted you to see in your brain. And this is what I teach my clients.
Man, that's interesting. I like hearing about the how you were picturing the hill and the outside picnic area, and she was as well. And it's like some people, like I grew up in a Christian community, and a lot of people would say that might be the Holy Spirit. You know, that might be, you know, God
absolutely
speaking through you. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. It shows the wonder of our brains and of the universe. It's like we can connect in ways, even though we're not in person right now, there's still a connection that's going on.
That oh, yeah.
Might not be as deep as if we were right next to each other, but still, like, we're the energy and frequency we're feeling. It's something that's why I love this podcast and just conversations in general. I'm like, I feel like it's something that is magic. It's like, it's indescribable, the feelings that you get when you're talking to someone. Like when I was like, man, I have no idea about vocal techniques, but let's just do it because I know that, you know, if we're both genuine, it's going to go someplace. And so that's amazing. And I guess I have a question. What would you recommend? What's your common recommendations for people with podcasts or for people with who are actually speaking in front of audience? How do you get them to captivate the audience?
So in 2019, I got selected to present in London at the World Estel Voice Symposium. And I took some of my students, some of my alumni, some of my parents, and my speech was about transformation magic using Estel in public school. And so it was scary because I literally was going to talk in front of some of the best voice coaches in the world, all right? And most of them are masters of craft and artistry. Nobody touches magic, Harley. Why? Because you can't see it, you can feel it, but nobody knows how to activate it. And they have all these rules, like they think that you have to have this, this, and this, and this in order to get to magic. I don't agree with that. I believe, like, if I see a kid playing outside and they're playing in the playground and they're having joy and they're sweating and it's just silly and you're going to feel that joy, right? There's no technique to it. There's nothing that's magical. And that makes us feel something. All right. So I went to the symposium. I did my speech. There are people that cried. There are people that were very skeptical that were like, he's dumbing down the craft. He's dumbing it down. And my response to them was like, do you want the world to know about this or not? And so I got to present on transformation magic. But before I went, I was like, Sean, I don't have a way to teach them how to get into the state before we do this. This was after a CrossFit workout. And about that time, God went, boop, dropped it right in my head. I had 1, 2, 3, 4 steps that people can go through. Now, I'm not going to share them right now, but what I can tell you is this. Those 4 simple steps can get anybody into a state to where the audience will feel exactly what you want them to feel from you, all right? So you have to intend on really good feelings that you want the audience to feel, all right? So if I'm going to do a podcast now, I don't really have to do it because it's constantly on for me now, all right? But when I was first working on this in 2019, my routine did not have in place how I could show up like I did for you today, every day, every moment, every time. Because there's a lot that goes into being whole. There's a lot that goes into presenting yourself as whole. It's a mental thing. It's physical. It's spiritual. It's emotional. It's your mindset. And these are things that I coach my clients on. I actually find out where are they at in those things. And that's how I hone in on what we need to work on. But the intention steps is what I call them. That it's a process to let you drop into your wholeness, your holy self, so that people can feel what you want them to feel from you. In Dispenza's book, you know, he talks about emotional energy, and the highest form of emotional energy is whole, you know, whole, wholeness. It's just like being holy in the Christian sense that you talked about. So how do you get there? How can I get there real fast, right? And so that's what I've been working on since 2019 is making that the ability to be able to speak about it with you right now and let you experience it, right? I've been working on this since like 2019, but the truth is I've always been working on this since I was a boy. Spirit, magic, intuition, the stuff that we can't see, energy. It's just been me my whole life. Like, people just feel me. Like, I don't have to I don't have to try to let people know me. Like they just, they, you just do, you feel it. You're like, okay, this guy, he sees right through me. I'm not gonna be able to lie to him. Like he's like, he sees me. He sees what I can be. I trust him. He makes me a little uncomfortable because he's so intense. But you know, my wife says a lot to me that I'm the most real person she's ever met.
That's a good compliment to have.
Yeah. And it's very lonely though, Harley. Because not a lot of people want to feel the way that I feel. And it's hard because, you know, like I feel what you feel for me right now, this excitement, this joy, this passion. But likewise, you know, when it's hard, I feel that just as deep. And so navigating that and having routines in place, like Wim Hof breathing, I've been doing like 4,000 rounds of that. Like, I meditate every day. I've been running every day for the last 11 years, at least 1 mile outside. Yeah. So like there's things that you must put in place in order for you to become the best version of yourself, in order to be whole. And all of it has to do with your voice. The voice I was just talking about with Jason, the voice that we have, these little vocal cords, every time we speak, there is a frequency of energy that goes into the universe, and energy cannot be created or destroyed. So that sound that we made literally will last for eternity. And the more that you put an emotional attachment to the sound, the more thick and the more resonant it will be in the universe forever.
Man, that's, I'm feeling that right now, because you know I've had similar compliments, like, you know, Harley, you wear your heart on your sleeve. I always know what you're feeling. You know, you can't hide anything. I'm like, yeah, I know. I know.
That's good.
You know, it's a good thing. And I'm a huge proponent of this thing. You've probably heard of it, the butterfly effect, where it's like every single word you speak, every single attitude you have, every single thing you do is going to impact the world in ways that you may never understand, but. You know, do you want your impact to be a negative or a positive one? It's like you might as well try to be a positive impact on someone. You have no idea, like, oh, if I'm kind and genuine to this person, the probability that they're going to be kind and genuine to the next person increases. And it's like making the world a better place through the energies that we get put out through our vocal cords. I really can resonate with that. Yeah, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that. So what I do with business clients, the majority of my business clients, when they come to me, Jason just said it to me today. He said, I was doing this whole thing and talking just like I have on this podcast today, but he stopped me. He goes, man, I wish that I could do what you just did. I said, what do you mean? Like just the way you talk, like your inflection, it goes up and down. It's all over the place and so intriguing. It's like so captivating. Like I want that, Matt. And I was like, yeah, that's why we're working, man. But in order to get that, you got to show this. You got to show this, man. Like you got to actually let us know you, the good parts and the bad parts and everything in between. All right. But the number one thing that I have to work with business clients is that's a singing, speaking, using your voice in a true fashion, speaking truth is a very vulnerable thing. All right. I was working with one of my awesome clients, Federico, and he told me on his first call, this is how deep like men go, like with me in the first call. He goes, I did my homework, Matt. I just want to let you know, my dad never said I love you to me. I was like, okay, man, let's go. let's dive into that. I had another guy in Minnesota. He's an insurance CEO. He would cry the first two sessions. And he'd be like, why do I always cry when I talk to you? I was like, I don't know, man. It's just what happens sometimes. It's okay. It's part of the process. But a lot of men, specifically men and women, like this kind of work is very vulnerable because emotionally, there's so much that, you know, as we get older, that we've learned from our parents, all right, or the people that raised us. You know, one of the first things that I think I wish that they taught in schools was, you know, how does your mom handle conflict? How does your dad handle conflict? Okay, how do you handle conflict? Did you know you have a choice in how you want to handle conflict? You don't have to handle it like them. That was a game changer for me. But if no one said that to me out loud, if no one used their voice to say those words to me, I probably wouldn't be here right now. And so absolutely, when you speak, when you sing, you must attach your emotional spirit, your emotional capacity to everything that comes out of your mouth. Likewise, to everything you create, to everything you write, to everything you text, to everything you type, to everything you draw, to the baseball you throw, to the football you throw. If you attach love, joy, bliss, wholeness to every single action that you do, your life is going to be crazy cool. All right? Because I've been to the Vatican City. I've walked into the Sistine Chapel. And when I walked into that place and I looked up, it literally took my breath away. And everybody around me was so quiet. It was like this energy was just going. I had no idea what I was looking at in 1998. No idea what I was experiencing, but I experienced it. Now at 45, Michelangelo and his team of his people that he trained took love, hope, perseverance, strength into a brush, into a paint, and they painted on freaking concrete, and they created something that's lasted for thousands of years. Now, if he didn't have passion for life or purpose, and he didn't attach any kind of emotion to any of those strokes, we would never go to the Sistine Chapel. If Leonardo painted the Mona Lisa just like, F this, this sucks, like whatever, and oh, I got to get this done. But he didn't. He painted it with mystery and intrigue and love and maybe lust, maybe curiosity. I'm going to mess with people's heads for the rest of their lives. And this piece of art is going to make people question their whole existence. That's what he intended. You think that these amazing, like the Eiffel Tower, you think like someone just put that up? Let's just put this up. Let's just make this thing. Statue of Liberty. Let's just put this together. This looks fun. But, you know, as an engineer, to your engineer buddies, you guys are learning craft, all right? You get older in the program, you learn artistry. But the masters learn magic. And magic is what's going to be remembered. It's your legacy. It's what's going to last when you're gone. And, you know, like, Hamilton's huge on Broadway, man. Like, I got to see the original cast. I got to meet Lin-Manuel Miranda on stage, actually. And I remember when I met him, he put his arm around me. He took my phone. He took a selfie of us. And he's talking to me. He's like, where are you from? I was like, Kansas. He goes, oh, that's perfect. But what was really intriguing was what I felt from him. We're the same. Our energy was the same. Like, he knew it too, and I knew it. We're bros. And so I say that because he took a lot of risks. And our lives are very short. But the art and the stuff that we can create with the stuff that we learn how to make with our craft artistry, the magic is the most important part. The magic is why we go to concerts. The magic is why we love the rock. Magic is the only reason really why Obama got elected, because he talked about hope. That's it. That's what got him elected. Period. Magic, you know, it's energy, it's frequency, it carries information. All right? The information, you get to decide what that is. But if you don't connect emotionally, then you're missing out on the best parts of life. You know, like, think about it. If you came to my house and I made you a pizza, you're going to be like, Matt, what in the world, man? This is like the best pizza I've ever had in my life. Well, the reason why is because I went to New York. I had New York pizza. I was like, why is this so good? And then I kept asking that question for years. Why is this so good? You know, it was like 20 years ago I went to New York for the first time. For like 5 years, I was researching, how do I make this pizza? So I talked to chefs that I knew. Really good chefs. It's like, tell me what you know. So they said, well, it's all about the ingredients. Okay, duh. All right. Got to get 00 flour from Italy. Got to get the best olive oil. Got to get the best ingredients. Okay, well, it still don't taste right, and it's still messing it up. Like, what's going on, man? And then we were watching the Food Network one year, and there was this place in Scottsdale that had the best pizza. And the secret, this dude was importing water from New York, from the Catskill Mountains. New York has the best tap water in the United States. All their bagels, all their bread, everything, it's magical because of the Catskill Mountains, because that's where they get their freaking water from, all right? So then this Scottsdale dude, he decided to have a chemist come in and change their water to be exactly like the water in New York. Once I figured out that little part, oh, it's New York water. There was a place for a while you could get New York tap water on Amazon. I'd have it shipped to my house. And sure enough, that was it. But also, how did I feel when I was making this pizza? I'm making New York pizza. This is going to be the best dang pizza ever, guys. I can't wait. Come over and see how I'm making this pizza, guys. Look at this. Check this out. This is amazing. And I've just got it down to an art now, but it's magic now. Everybody that tastes it, they don't have problems with digestion. They don't have problems with anything. They don't gain weight. It's amazing pizza, bro. But the reason why is because I mastered the craft. I got the art down. I used a baking steel in my oven that's from Pittsburgh. One of my Arte Syndicate brothers, he owns it. It's called Baking Steel. You can just put it in your oven, and it's made from Pittsburgh steel. It's amazing, and it will cook your pizza in like 3 to 5 minutes. It's badass, all right? So I got the craft. I got the art down. Now I'm going to make, you know, homemade Alfredo, get the best ingredients, pepperoni, blah, blah, blah. But the way that I make it, I'm making this dough. Love this. This is so much fun. You guys are going to have so much fun eating this pizza, right? But my point with all of this is, emotionally, if you don't have an attachment and you don't feel something, then nobody is going to come back for your stuff, man. Nobody.
Man, I like the analogy. Like, it kind of ties in with, like, I'll give two examples. One, like, you're helping people coach on their voice, but like imagine you were still 250 pounds and you were not happy with yourself, and you know you weren't motivated yourself, and you didn't feel happy, you didn't feel good. It's like, how could you be a person that is teaching people how to speak with love and speak with passion? It's like, if you weren't passionate about your life, it's like,
yeah.
And the same thing with me. It's like, I try my best to be genuine. Like, my first episode I actually released was on my porn addiction, and like,
oh wow.
And how like that was messed me up. It messed up my relationships. And you wow. know, ever since then, I've done a few other episodes with different people, a few dropping soon, but it's like, that's kind of what I've been known for. Like, I do episodes on why I cry, like the importance of crying.
Dude,
and like,
I love that.
So like, I think people listen to this because I try my best to, you know, I try my best to be motivated. I hit the gym every day. I try to eat as healthy as possible. I try to have strong relationships with people. I try to be genuine with people. I'm like, and I think both of us are doing that. And that's why we're doing well. And we're passionate about what we're doing. It's like, you know, if I was not motivated, and if I was, you know, I couldn't captivate people as well. Same with you.
No.
And that's what I love. It's all about that passion. It's about that energy. Are you feeling good when you're doing it? Are you excited to start your day, or are you dreading it? It's like, yeah, the difference.
Well, and you know, sometimes I do dread it, but the routine kicks in and you're in it and you're running, or you're in meditation, or you're doing the breathing, and you forget about, you know, you were having a bad day. Because one of my family members, Sydney, said last week, just because we have a bad day doesn't mean we have a bad life. And I was like, you're right. That's exactly right. But, you know, like, I feel so deeply, and I know you do too, that it can be overwhelming to the majority of people because they don't. And, you know, I've gotten in trouble a few times because I do feel so deeply that, you know, people feel what I feel, and they, you know, it scares them. Like it really does. Like, it gets too much, too intense. But it's who I am. What I have to do is I have to make sure that what people feel are not the bad stuff, like not the negative, not the anger or upset or sad, right? And what I've learned to do as a performer, because I sing and I act, I've been in shows and all that, like, and speaking to people, doing podcasts, you can't ever really go real sad or real dark or real angry, because I've done that before, and it messes people up, like triggers them big time. So for instance, I'll just give you an example, right? So I'm going to talk about the show this week. Okay. So I'm going to talk about Blue and White Starry Nights, this commercial show that we're doing, but I'm going to talk about it first in a way that would not probably be what you'd want to do. And then I'm going to talk about it in a way that you would want to do. All right. So this is the way you don't want to do it. So we're doing Blue and White Starry Night, and there's a song called Monsters by James Blunt. And James Blunt wrote this song during COVID, and it's about his dad. It's about saying goodbye to his dad. It's about passing of torch and losing a father and his struggle with that. And just the passing of that torch and how hard it is to let go and to say goodbye to a parent. So that's one way to do it, right? This is the other way to do it. So we're doing this show, and there's a song called Monsters, and it's by James Blunt. It's about the passing of a parent, passing of a father. It's about legacy, and he wrote this during COVID to give people hope and strength during a time where we lost a bunch of people. And it's about legacy. It's about, you know, we all have to lose a parent eventually in our life, and it's okay. And this song is one of the most beautiful moments in the show. So that's the other way you could do it. So the first way was all sad. First way was all sad. My trigger, my visualization, walking into the church, seeing my grandpa's body because he shot himself when I was in high school. And just staying in that moment while I was talking. Yeah, nobody wants to feel that. The second one was the same trigger with the addition of the visual, me holding my son Max when he was born in the air and seeing his face and falling in love and knowing, man, I love that kid. That's my legacy. So I attached both those visuals to my visualization emotionally so I could feel sad, but love and hope.
And that's a great strategy. I haven't even thought about that before, where you're talking about something and I guess maybe I've thought about it, but implicitly without recognizing it. It's like, you know, I'm talking about something, but emotionally I'm thinking of things, but it's like using the sad, you know, situation to feel sad, or using a hopeful situation to, you know, captivate hope. And yeah, that's interesting.
You're just mashing together.
Yeah.
And you can't go too far sad. Like that's practice, right? So like practicing, like if you have a story that you tell, like you can't go too far dark, all right? You always have to have hope and love attached, unless like you really, really just want to mess people up. Like, you know, like for a movie, I guess, like if that's what you're going for. You know, but eventually you got to bring him out of it. And that's kind of the superpower that I have now, that I have to be very mindful about and aware about. Like, I can't let people feel the intensity of anger, sadness, depression from me. I can't, because it will affect them. And so I have to constantly be mindful of, okay, Max, Leo, Andrea, Sydney, my family, my students, hope, love, it's okay. It's okay, man. Like, we got this. And so, you know, it always brings you back. It brings you back to your purpose. You know, my purpose on earth is to help people find their voice. And that gives me hope. That gives me joy. That gives me love. That gives me so much drive. I mean, you know, to hear people speak with truth is a gift. It's the best gift you could ever give me. And more than anything, when a person in my life or comes in and has to tell me something hard, or, you know, when we're out there and we're working through something, or a client on Zoom cries because they're getting through something that they have to get through, that's a magical moment, man, because those are change tears. And I know after that moment, they're never going to be the same ever again.
Yeah, I've been motivated today to try to, when I speak, use emotion and use genuineness, if that's a word, but try not to get too sad or too happy. Leave, you know, be balanced in it. It's that pull. Oh, go ahead.
I think you can be sad, but just remember, like, hope, love, hope, love, hope, love. And there needs to be a trigger. There needs to be a memory that's so intense in your lifetime that you can constantly go back to, like Max being born, Leo being born, asking Andrea to marry me, getting Sydney to college. Like, those kinds of triggers, they're a driving force of love and wholeness and happiness and joy. Like, everybody needs those. Everybody needs those triggers to to remember that, you know, it's gratitude, really. Like, you're being grateful of that, those moments, and that, you know, you remember how amazing that was to hold him up in that delivery room and be like, this is my son. What? This is crazy. I didn't think I could love anybody more. And that, yeah, this is how I coach my clients, man. Like, and a lot of them, you know, they have the technique as far as business down, right? They have their craft down, but they don't know how to present it. And most of them are afraid to actually present themselves. Just to present themselves, like, they're afraid to present themselves as whole.
Yeah, I guess the lesson of this is attempt to be whole in your life. Pursue things that are meaningful so that you can talk passionately about them. Try to, search for things that give you passion and hope. And,
well, it's like Bob Testman said. I think people that made it this far in the podcast, what do you love? What makes you tick? What's your purpose on earth? But more importantly, what do you love? What do you love more than anything? Gives you joy, gives you love, makes you want to do something, makes you want to fight for something, right? And that's the thing you go for. Like, anything else is going to be very boring, and it's not going to work, and it's going to clank.
Boring for you and boring for the audience.
Everyone. No one's going to buy your crap either. Like, nobody. No one.
Yeah.
Not a single person.
On that note, I'd say that's a great place to end it. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Matt. What would you be your final parting words to someone who is trying to find their voice?
Don't give up. Go there. Feel the pain. Feel the sorrow. Experience it and ask yourself the question, what's the lesson in this?
Because there's always a lesson, whether it's a good situation or a bad.
Yep.
Well, that's amazing, Matt. I really appreciate you coming on here.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Harley. That was fun.
It really was.